This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
It's now officially day two of Magic Live, at least the second full day. We had, we said yesterday's report, that we had the Sunday night party, and it was a lot of fun, and I'm going to talk with somebody here about that, and then also about all the activities that happened yesterday, kind of recapping what happened yesterday, and then yesterday evening then as well. Please welcome my guest here this morning, my breakfast companion, as we just finished our breakfast, Matt Alexander. Hey there, Matt.
Good morning, Scott. Good to see you.
It is a good morning, and it's even better for me to see you. You have a bright, smiling face, and your shaven face now, too. So tell me about that.
Normally I sport a full beard, but the Sunday night activities encouraged us to dress up somehow. Mm-hmm. And so I went with Ted Lasso, and Ted only sports a mustache.
That's
so
right.
I shaved everything but the mustache, did my Ted Lasso bit on Sunday. But I'm not a mustache guy. It doesn't look as good on me. So once that was done, I shaved it off. And my beard will grow back in about a week and a half. It grows pretty quick. But for right now, I look kind of baby-faced.
So obviously you were a fan of the Ted Lasso series. And you were one of the contestants.
I don't know for sure. I think I was. But near the end, Stan came up and specifically asked to take my picture took a picture of my badge. So I'm going to generously assume that I was one of the finalists, but I did not win. And I don't feel too bad. The amount of effort that some of the other folks put into their costumes was astounding. Now, I think I'm the only one that shaved their beard. Maybe deserved a little extra credit, but, you know, I'll go all in for a bit.
That's right. Commit to the bit.
Absolutely.
That was a fun party. And then the next day, and then yesterday, we started off then with the morning session at 10 o'clock, and that was pretty amazing.
It was great. And one of the things that I wasn't expecting, which shouldn't be a surprise, Magic Live is usually full of a lot of unexpected things. There was a presentation from one of the founders of the VR company, The Void, and I apologize, I can't remember his name, but he had been at Magic Live several years ago.
2016,
yeah, and that was my first Magic Live. Hmm. I don't specifically remember him being there, so I'm going to go back and go through my stuff and kind of try to refresh my memory. But I really enjoyed his presentation on what VR has learned and can learn from magic and the other way around. And I was super excited to hear that they are continuing to try to build the business back up after COVID really hit them hard. I had several people yesterday that were telling me how cool it looked, the technology that they have. I'm lucky to have been able to experience it twice. And as cool as it
both
looked...
Both in Vegas here?
One was in Vegas and one was in Anaheim. And both times I did the Star Wars scenario. There were some choices, yes. They also had a Marvel one, and there was a Ghostbuster one, and there was a non-branded kind of fantasy adventure, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But as cool as it looked in the presentation, it doesn't touch to the actual experience. It was absolutely amazing.
People who they had testimonials from were saying, it's the most amazing thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine until you've actually put on that headgear and do it and everything. Because you feel like you're walking. It's a walking experience. It's not something you just sit in a chair.
Exactly.
And very interactive.
You know, a lot of people have had the VR experience with, like, the Meta goggles.
Right.
But that's in your living room, and there's no walls. There's no interaction. The thing that's so amazing about this is there's a real-world environment. So if you reach out and see a wall or a door, it's there. If in the case of the Star Wars experience, when you had a blaster, you had an actual...
Something you're holding.
And when you pulled the trigger, it vibrated, and you saw lasers shoot out.
Wow.
And I remember one sequence where we were near a kind of a lava pit, And you could feel heat, and I smelled smoke, and
immersive.
I was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just amazing. And I was very disappointed when I saw that they had closed their facilities. And so I'm thrilled that they've got one back in Chicago, and I hope that they're able to rebuild their VR empire, because it's an astounding experience.
I haven't had a chance to experience that yet, but I'm looking forward to sometime doing that. I remember his talk, and this might refresh your memory of that, because he was talking about how that you have to think like a magician and think outside the box then, basically, because he and his team were thinking you have to have for a place to walk through, you have to have a flat, like a big warehouse, right, or something like that. But then he realized, since you're going to be having on this blinder, basically, then you can't see anything. It doesn't need to be that way, as long as you're walking apparently in a straight line. So they started putting them like in silos.
Mm.
So instead of going out, you would go up, but you wouldn't recognize you going up because the rest of the misdirection, basically, they're using, like he was talking about yesterday, the handrails or whatever else. But I found that amazing. And then as a follow-up to that story, he was at South by Southwest talking about magic and and VR. And I was actually, the Magic Castle had recommended me to this lady who was giving a presentation on Fitzky's 15 points of magic and kind of, you know, how engineers should use VR to think like a magician, basically.
Yep. Yep.
And so I would, she said, for an example, and then I would do a torn restored newspaper talking about, you know, this is, and then, or Los Angeles floating table.
Yep.
And so I was doing things in between as she would then talk about that particular trick, if you will, being in the genre of transportation or transformation or penetration or whatever, and think about that. So as a VR expert, that you shouldn't be thinking about going over or around or through necessarily, but how else can you get around this mountain,
kind of a thing.
So anyhow, that was a great presentation. One, and Nick DeFont was talking about, go ahead, yo-yos.
Yeah, one of the things that we got in our welcome package was a yo-yo.
We all got a backpack, which is kind of cool.
Nice backpack. It was great. Nice backpack. There's a really nice yo-yo in there. Not that I'm a yo-yo expert, but I dabbled when I was younger, and I have used crappy yo-yos, and this is not one. It's really quite nice.
Okay.
But he brought out a Cirque du Soleil performer to help us understand how to use the yo-yo, I guess.
Yeah, he was dressed like in green, and the top of his head had a yellow or white rope attached to it.
So
he looked like
He looked kind of like the yo-yo, and he rolled,
They
talked about how to do walk the dog with the yo-yo, and how to tie the loop properly with the yo-yo, and it was quite amusing.
And although he had introduced them as saying, because he's working with Cirque right now out in New York at the Big Apple, he was saying that in reality, at the end, this was John Lovick.
Yes.
That you couldn't see because of his outfit and everything. We had Derek Delgadio, who had spoken then also. A lot of inspirational things. Jason England was talking about an experience he had had when he was younger, seeing these three guys kind of sitting over there who were idols of his. He went over to talk to them, and then they said, well, after a while, you know, can you leave? We're talking about something else. He realized, you know, that's where the secrets really happen.
Yeah.
And he said, we're going to let you in on something, you know, that those three guys are here again, and we're going to be talking about secrets. So, you know, come to this particular... Anyhow, this workshop is going to be coming up during the course of the convention here. And the two guys who are the MCs, you want to talk about them?
Yeah, they...
Young and Strange.
Young and Strange were very entertaining, and they talked about how to do a stage illusion for $9, and they did...
which was the Hans Moretti thing, basically, with the kind of dowel rods through the box.
Yep. You know, a swords through basket type effect, but they had a cardboard box and dowel rods, and did the presentation, which was great. I thought their pacing was fantastic. Their choice of music, Live and Let Die, was great.
Exactly. I caught that, too.
And then, and something I'd never seen at the end, they set a camera up from above. And so you had...
They explained it.
Yep. You had a view from the top with the box open, and you could see how they did it. And I don't know, I found it a little terrifying. I don't know that I could sit in there with those rods coming through so quickly, so close to your head and other vital parts of your body.
So very well choreographed.
Yes, yeah.
I would recommend, by the way, for those who are listening, if you go to the magicwordpodcast.com for days 1 and 2, I have a collage of photos there. One of them is that picture that talking about.
Yeah.
Because you could see from the front, but also from the overhead camera, there was it was projected on a screen behind them.
Yep.
So you get to see this.
Yeah, it was great. It was very entertaining, very informative, and really liked those guys. I'm not familiar with them before this, but really enjoyed their presentation. I thought it was a great way to start the week.
Well, Richard Young has his own podcast, The Magician's Podcast, which is a really good one, completely different from what this is. And he is also, the two of them had traveled with, wasn't The Illusionist, but it was, another one, I can't remember, Holly England was involved, and a couple other guys. In fact, I did a podcast with them a couple of years ago when they came through Houston for a while. But anyhow, I'm trying to think who else. So and at the end, then they wrapped up with something else. Didn't they do another trick at the end when they...
I'm trying to remember. Well, I know that they had a comedy bit after they did their first performance where drank a bottle of water.
Yeah.
And and several streams
were coming out of
his body.
Young, like he'd been penetrated by these Elrond.
Yes. So I honestly can't remember. I apparently haven't had enough coffee yet this morning.
That's right.
But it was a great
session.
Start. Yeah, very good session.
And that was a good way of starting, and then that was repeated in the afternoon, which gave time then for, because you and I have red lanyards, and then those with white lanyards would switch. And that's why the convention is limited to 1,600, because the theater seats 800, so that way they could switch out that way. And then the afternoon sessions, which we went to, the other people went to those sessions in the morning, and those were only repeated on one day. So today we've got completely different sessions that we're going to. And with that, you get a choice of 2 out of 3, and you can't go to all of them.
Right, yep.
Well, you can get out of the room and go to another one or something. But I thought that I ended up going to the one with Carbone.
Yep.
Angelo Carbone, and that was called
the
Cardone's Creativity
one,
Class.
Right? Yep. I enjoyed that as well.
It was the configuration of the chairs. Talk about that.
Yeah, so... they had a very strange kind of U-shaped structure and
really
several
horseshoe,
pods.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the nice thing about that was it gave everybody a really nice clear view to the stage. But really, more importantly, the point of that exercise was to interact.
Right.
And so you're facing each other because of the U.
One
so
right across from you.
Yeah. So the idea was to sort of brainstorm. Flex your creativity muscle.
Right.
So, and you did that together and shared ideas and built upon what one another was saying and then shared it with the group. And I really liked that exercise. And I agree with his point that in order to be creative, you've got to exercise that muscle. It's not something that comes naturally to everyone, and I thought his sports example was was a really good one.
I had written an article about that back in the 90s about that very thing, and I picked that up actually from Jeff McBride, who was saying that creativity is a muscle and must be exercised.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because we all have it, in my belief. And then the other one that I had attended was the one by who was that? Gabriel Worland, who was a it was the art of shaping perception.
Oh, yep.
And he was talking about some mentalism.
Yes.
He's one who had also had the Devil's Cups and and some other nice effects with coins and cards and cups and things. And well thought out, well structured. A lot of process for getting to the effect, I felt. But a lot of good stuff to take away from there.
Yeah, and that was the one that I also attended.
Okay.
Enjoyed that. I actually picked up his book and lecture notes after the fact because I thought that there were some good ideas that I wanted to dig into a little bit more that I didn't quite feel you could really get a good hold of in the limited amount of time that we had. So I thought it was a good taste, and if it was something that you liked, then you know it's worth putting a little bit more effort into. And so I'm looking forward to reading those.
The other one was Children Do Not Exist, and that was with Mago Gala. And I am not a children's entertainer. I entertain families, but these others were of more interest to me. But I did notice that that room was packed every time I walked by it as well.
Yeah, I would have. I'm the same. I'm a hobbyist, so I don't perform regularly to anybody other than friends and family and sometimes customers. But I would have liked to have gone, but in terms of the 2 out of 3 is the only thing you can do.
That was
the third one for me, but I'm sure it was a great session.
Yeah, today we're going to be having, let's see, what are the sessions on over here? Acting for Magicians. It's going to be with Chris Philpott and Steve Valentine. That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
Share the Awe is going to be with Javi Benitez. And The MacGyver of Magic by Christian Engblom. All three of those. It's going to be hard to choose which one I want to go to of those then as well. As far as what went on then last night, we can't really talk too much about that in this episode. We can perhaps talk about it later tonight because they will not be repeated tomorrow. But you went to the close-up experience?
No, I have close-up tonight.
Oh, that's right.
I did Tonto.
And that was the line I was standing in by air.
I'm so sorry about that.
I went last night at 11 o'clock. I had a ticket for the 11 o'clock close-up experience, and I was in line with Tonto, and I was talking to somebody and got carried away, and next thing I knew, as we were walking in, they said, "You got the wrong ticket." It's like, oh, my gosh. And, of course, the other one had started, and I couldn't get in, so I'm going to have to wait standby tonight.
I've had a few people that have gone to the close-up and said it's fantastic, but they're good about not sharing spoilers.
Right.
So
don't share any spoilers about Tonto.
I won't. I enjoyed it, yes. And then I had the Little Big Show.
Okay.
And that was also really good.
That's not Dana Daniels. His was the Nothing Show, I think he does. So Little Big Show is different.
Yeah, okay. Little Big Show is different. So, and I won't
spoiler. I'll see that tonight.
I was about ready to say who was the MC, and then I thought,
nope. Don't tell me that.
Got to hold off.
And I went to see the Junior's documentary from the Magic Castle, which was really excellent. That's going to be on then tonight. You're going to see that tonight?
I am seeing that tonight. I'm really looking forward to that. I really am impressed by the Juniors at the Castle. So I have the opportunity to see them on the weekends frequently at the brunch, and then when they do the Juniors week. If I'm free, I do like to go to that because there's some amazing...
Well, the three
talent.
People they brought were outstanding. It's like, holy cow, these guys should be in FISM. They should win.
So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, I think you'll enjoy that then, too. So what are your recollections of previous Magic Lives you attended? Anything kind of stands out? It's like, I keep coming back because of...
Yeah, you know, I keep coming back because of the opportunity to interact with other people that love Magic. Get to see friends like you, learn some new things, buy some tricks that I may or may not really need, but they're fun to learn. And I sometimes I'll actually buy something not because I think I'll incorporate it into a presentation somewhere, but I think it's a really great trick, and I want to support the artist. So now my wife might claim that that's an excuse. But, you know, I still have room in my magic cave, so until we run out, I'm going to continue to use that excuse.
You're still a young man. You got a lot of things to get by and learn and to do. So, I'm looking forward to the rest of this convention. It's going to be outstanding. And one of the things that Stan does is presents is like his magazine. From the standpoint, you don't know what's going to be happening until you turn the page.
Exactly.
And so that's the reason he keeps a surprise. And the swag we got was kind of cool. Like you said, the backpack. And then last year they gave us some sort of a puzzle box.
Yes.
I think on the last night, wasn't it? Or was that early
on? I think we got it when we checked in, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Because like an idiot, I didn't look at it closely enough to realize that there was a hidden compartment.
Oh.
And so, which made perfect sense after the fact. But so we had a really nice backpack. And the yo-yo, And we've got a special deck of cards that we're going to learn how to use.
Right.
It's always a great, great experience. And I really do like the fact that, as you were saying, Stan keeps it a secret. So it's like the magazine where until you turn that page, you don't know what's going to be there. And that makes it fun.
It sells out every year. So I always tell people in advance, make sure you do register, because always, as you get closer to the last minute, people are scrambling trying to find tickets if anything's available.
Well, and not only that, but as you get further and further down the line in the registration, some of the things you may end up in a standby line. So if you register early, you get into the gala show earlier, and you have a guaranteed ticket for the things like the close-up experience, which, as long as you get in the right line, you can enjoy it.
Just rub it in and twist that knife. You know. Thank you. Well, for the Magic Word Podcast, we're having a great time. That was Matt Alexander. Scotty out. One of the people who we've been going in the afternoons and the mornings to these different general sessions. Sorry, not the general sessions, but the breakout sessions, actually. And one of the guys who's actually been an MC yesterday and again here today, we're getting ready to watch Javi Benitez, is Armando Lucero. Hey, Armando, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Good to see you again.
You as well. So you enjoying this from your perspective so far?
Yes, yes. This is great. I love it. I get to meet friends and introduce them. So it's really, really great. Yeah.
Right. And I see you're wearing a red lanyard, so obviously that you got to see the morning session then as well.
Actually, I missed it. I didn't feel right last night, so I just slept and slept. So I overslept.
You slept in?
Yes.
So did you stay up late last night and with some friends?
I think I caught something, so I was really tired. Not a cold, something else. I was just exhausted.
Well, yeah, I hope it's nothing serious.
No, I'm good. I was just taking some rest.
So you've been coming here for a long number of years. What is one of your favorite memories of the Magic Live?
Wow. Let's see. So nothing specific comes to mind. Just a lot of different things come to mind. Usually the sessions that I've had with people, it's actually not the major shows, but when I get to sit around friends and see their work and we get to hang out and talk, those are probably the most beautiful moments for me.
Yeah, it's a camaraderie.
And of course the shows are great, and I do see some excellent shows, but it's really, you know, the camaraderie, as you said. That's really what I like when I get to break out with a few people and talk to them.
Right. Anything that you're working on new right now? Hey, there, Richard.
Hey, Richard.
Good to see you. Richard Kaufman over there. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, I'm working on the Hungry Imagination site, as usual, putting out works every month. Writing and
any book coming out or anything soon?
So I might turn it into a book and release some of the works from there. So
that's down the road. That's a lot of work, I know.
It's a lot of work. Yeah, I do the whole thing myself. I program the site. I arrange and publish, and I write, and I make the videos, and I create, and most of the material, for the most part, most of the material is original material. So that's really quite a challenge and very hard. But fortunately, it's a lot of fun too.
It is a lot of fun, I know it, but it's challenging, but it's rewarding at the end of that as well.
Yes.
Well, it's about time for Javi to start, and I'm going to be working with him, I think, next year on a lecture tour, so perhaps some of you guys might get a chance to see him.
Right,
Armando,
thank
sir,
you.
Thank you very much for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. I wanted to talk with someone here from the Magic Castle. I see him at the castle all the time. Seems like working over there by the bar near the parlor, as well as teaching in the back in the teaching area down the basement then as well. And that's John Kippen. Hello, John. How are you doing?
Really good. Thank you, Scott.
You enjoying the convention?
Absolutely.
What has been something that's been outstanding for you so far? We've been here like a day and a half so far.
I really enjoyed today's general session. And spending my money in the dealer's room.
What'd you buy?
A whole bunch of little stuff.
Of course you did.
Yeah, absolutely.
You never have too much. Well, this morning, you know, in the general session that was hosted by Master Payne, it was always great to see him do his PowerPoint presentations and everything that he does, you know, and then finishing up as Santa Claus. It was fantastic. It was well-rounded and had a lot of good content in between.
Yeah, and he's a wonderful memory.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So who was it that was within the whole session that stood out for you?
I really enjoyed John Armstrong's talk about transition from close-up to stage and parlor.
Right.
You know, I've known John for 20 years, and I followed his career.
Right.
And to see him make that transition has been really exciting.
I have, and many times over the years, the podcast, I've asked different people how it is you go about selecting an audience volunteer and making sure you have the right person. And I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he was a doctor and psychologist, I guess, who had worked with the CIA as well. And he was talking about profiling, basically, and trying to get the right person. Fabulous. Very interesting.
Yeah. No, when I do it, it's all about warming up the audience, sharing a little bit about yourself, and you can immediately see who's engaged and who's not. Just by their facial expressions, the way they're eyeing you, they're smiling, and you can tell immediately that they're going to be a good spectator or they're not going to be a good spectator.
You know, that brings me to a very good point, John, in which a lot of times that magicians tend to look over the audience rather than at the individual people in the audience. In other words, that you should be directing your attention to somebody, then you direct your gaze to somebody else, but you're actually involving the audience and breaking that fourth wall if you do look more directly at them rather than kind of talking back and forth over the audience, back and forth. I mean, I understand sometimes you can't see very far because the lights are in your eyes, but depending upon your performing situation, you should be able to look at somebody directly, and so therefore that you can kind of pick up on those little cues exactly what you're talking about.
You know, Bob Fitch has been a longtime friend and mentor of mine. And you know, he, in his workshops, he talks about 1.1 person.
Oh, I like that.
You know, you look at someone, you make a point, you do a trick, then you look at someone else. And my best audience management tool is learning their names.
I agree. Like whenever that I'm going to be talking, doing close-up or something, it's important, I think, to not only know your host's name, but also the people, because you're walking out and calling them, hey, thanks, Judy, or thanks, Carl, I appreciate it. And they go, how do you remember my name? You know?
All you have to do is remember three or four,
yeah.
And
you seem like
people in the audience think that you remember everybody's name.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly.
And as you do your close-up, as I do my close-up, I use their names as... Well, what'd you think, Scott?
Yeah.
You know, or pick a book of cards, Scott. And so now they're on notice that you know their name.
Right. And they're more likely to remember yours then, too.
Right. There was, an experience. I was doing a close-up show in the classroom downstairs many years ago. And I had introduced myself, and there was a guy who decided to get out his phone. And it was more important that he do whatever on his phone. And so I called his name. And he's texting on his phone. And then I paused and I went silent. And all of a sudden he realized that there was nothing going on.
Everybody's waiting and looking at
him.
And
he looked up.
Yeah.
And my gaze was on him, forcing the rest of the audience's gaze on him.
That's good.
And then he realized. But then I gave him an out. I said, Joe, oh, thank you for, you know, I want to show my appreciation. You were tweeting about my show.
Yeah.
And I really think that, and make sure you get my name spelled right. It's K-I-P-P-E-N.
Yeah.
When you post it on Instagram.
Yeah.
And, you know, he came up after, actually his wife came up after and said, you know, you could have really made a fool out of Joe.
And embarrass him, sure.
And you gave him an out. And I don't think he'll ever disrespect a performer again being on his phone.
Because you turn the audience against you also.
Oh, absolutely.
Not just that one person, but everybody.
But I'm also putting everyone else on notice that if they're doing something inappropriate during my show, you know, the close-up act that I do, and it varies from day to day, I've done 6,000 times. So my hands do the magic. So then I can focus on the relationship with me and the audience.
Right.
And reading their facial expressions and taking their suggestions and putting them on a pedestal and making them the star of the show.
Right.
You know, and so many magicians miss that. It's such an important part of being a good close-up performer.
I agree. Tell me something briefly also about the podcast, or the school that you're the class,
well,
online.
Well, when the pandemic hit, the gas was closed. I used to go to Friday lunch every Friday. And all of a sudden now there's no magic, no nothing. I couldn't see my friends. So I decided to start a Zoom cast every Friday. And I started inviting magicians to come on and do 20 minutes of magic. And then I do a 20-minute interview so that the audiences could learn a little bit about the person, the man or woman who was the magician. And it's amazing. I've had 201 unique different magicians from 17 different countries and dozens of different states. Everyone from Markobi, from who won FISM, to Joshua J, to some, I can't even remember all the magicians that I've had.
And then afterwards you have a Q&A, I guess, with the people who are zoomed in?
Yes, absolutely. And then I ask everybody at the end two questions. What is your proudest achievement in magic? And what is your definition of magic? And then I take the little cutout of the video of their definition of magic and I post it at meaningofmagic.com. It's interesting to hear what magicians have as their definition. And I give them a little advance notice so they're not caught on the spot in case they didn't have a definition. But every one of them have come to the Zoom prepared with their definition.
Right.
Well, you know, the common denominator is the magic is about the audience, and it happens in their brain, not in the magician's hands.
That's true. That's right. Magic happens in there. Well, I'm honored that you had asked me, and I'm going to be coming up this fall for you, so it'll be fun.
Absolutely. Really looking forward to that.
That'll be fun. John, thanks very much. I appreciate it. Always good seeing you, my friend.
Thank you. Good for thanks for everything you do for the world.
I appreciate that a lot. So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was John Kippen, Scotty L. One of the presenters from yesterday's general session was on Houdini, and quite an interesting take on his life. Just when you think there's nothing else to say about Houdini, there's always something else, and that's why John Cox can actually dig that out, and that's why in his daily blog he has of Wild About Houdini, or Wild About Harry, actually, but it's Wild About Houdini is what the .com is the website, which I suggest you go to, and you can go back and listen to one of the episodes that he and I had done, and we get together from time to time to chat. One of my favorite people I like to visit with whenever, particularly I'm in L.A., or occasionally we get to be at conferences together, and we get to spend a little bit of time. But he, yesterday, was talking about a different phase of Houdini's life that really hasn't been explored, and he's writing or has completed a new, about to be complete, a new book on it. Okay, I'm going to shut up. Here he is, John Cox. Hey, John.
Hey, Scott. Great to see you.
Not much more for you to say, is
there? Right? No, I'm fascinated.
So tell me about what angle that you got on this book.
Yeah, well, that's what I do. This was kind of the grand reveal of something that I've been working on for a while. Dr. Bruce Averbuch, who we all know, a big collector in Cleveland, owns Houdini's first travel diary. And this is from before he was famous, 1897 to 1899. He kept a travel diary of everywhere he went, all his engagements, his tours with medicine shows and circuses. Anyways, Bruce, Mike Caveney is going to publish the diary, and Bruce and Mike came to me and said, do you want to go through the diary and annotate it, flesh it out, make it into a story, which is what I've done. And I kind of gave the first look inside the diary here, and we read some entries, and we got a little taste of the young Houdini, the young struggling Houdini, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be a real special book.
It was something before he became the great escape artist, when he was still considered a sideshow act, basically, just kind of a 10-in-1, where he was doing card tricks and things.
He was doing, you know, he's doing a little bit of everything. He was doing his handcuff act, but ironically, he had trouble selling dime museum managers on the handcuff act. Mm-hmm. To them, they thought, I don't know, this sounds a little too weird. Betting, and we don't want edgy stuff. We like you just to do straight magic. Mm-hmm. So he would go into these establishments and say, you know, I can do magic. I can do cards. My wife can sing. We do metamorphosis together. Handcuffs, spiritualism.
Yep.
He would sort of offer a whole plate of things I can do, and he would be booked for whatever they wanted. But yeah, he's doing a little bit of everything.
But a couple of things about the diary itself. Well, more than that, I mean, the fact about how that you had found that, and you first saw that in a book that Doug Henning had written. So tell that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, this goes back. The book Houdini's Legend and His Magic by Doug Henning. This came out in 1977. I got it as a Christmas present in 1977. Blew my mind because this book is just filled with artifacts that Doug got from Bess Houdini's sister. So this is family artifacts, photo albums, and really precious stuff. And among those precious things was this early, early diary, which Houdini had held on to his whole life. And there are pictures of four pages in that book. And since 1977, I've been looking at that saying, wait a minute, where's this diary? Does this diary exist? What's it all about? And I eventually learned that it did, and it was owned by Bruce, and we talked about it. And like I said, Bruce said, you know, I do want to share this with the world, but I want to do it in the right way. And so this is the right way.
One of the things that you didn't discuss, and I don't know if you know, I'm sure you probably know the details on that, and I was fascinating. I will be fascinated to hear how the Bruce acquired this. I wonder if this was part of the Houdini Museum from Niagara Falls from way back when, or how, where did it come from, and how did Bruce acquire that? Do you know any of the details on that? Or
He got an auction. I believe he got an auction. I actually, offhand, I don't know. Bruce wrote an introduction for us. Presumably it's in there.
Okay.
Well, I believe he got it at an auction.
Okay.
At some point, it changed hands.
I'm just wondering the provenance of it. I guess, you know, how it came to, after he had written it, about how that Henning. I wonder if it's part of Henning's collection or something. I mean, if how that Henning saw it, took pictures of it, or somebody else who was the publisher might have gotten it. I'm curious about the early provenance, I guess, of that.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure.
You
I know
can add that to the book.
That it probably is in the book. It's probably in Bruce's introduction. We also have a chapter by the Restorationists. You know, it went from Bessie's family. And you know what? I want to say then it went to Doug Henning, but I'm not even sure about that. So I don't know.
Henning had some Houdini memorabilia, didn't he?
Yeah, and that's what he used. But he combined it with some larger collections. So I don't want to go on record with exactly the steps it took, but at some point it came up to auction, and Bruce bought it.
Okay.
And he did restoration on it, and now he's making it available to everyone. Soon everyone will have this on their bookshelf.
One of the fascinating things, I think, also is how you deciphered his horrible handwriting. And not just the handwriting, but also you were able to take out things that you were able to, I mean, like, okay, this is actually not part of the sentence. This actually belongs someplace else.
Yeah, well, that was the challenge. It's a little tiny book, and Houdini, it's just jam-packed. So he abbreviates. There are earlier entries which he has, you know, recorded the expense of a train trip, but then he's written around it.
Yeah.
And so you got to kind of figure it, you know, puzzle it out, figure out what is one thought or what connects. And we could do that for a great deal of it. Some things, though, you know, just completely stumped me. But, boy, I figured out a lot of it.
What do you think was the intent of the diary? Was that something you think that Houdini was just keeping for himself? Obviously, he wasn't thinking in the future somebody's going to be reading this or not. I mean, what do you think? Why do you think he kept it?
This was a tool, and these were sold to itinerant performers. And it's very much a travel diary for performers.
Oh.
It's really just the diary itself is so interesting. You buy this, and you buy it for two seasons. So this is season 1897 to 1899.
Yeah.
And it's really cool because it's got, in the front of it, it's got like all the different weather signals and calendars and all these things that people on the road, like you, would have needed back then. And then it's got, it's, we call it a diary because he treats it like a diary, but it's technically a date book. It's sold as a date book for road performers. And you keep track of your gigs, where you need to be, where you're going to perform. And Houdini would not only keep track of every engagement that he was doing, but also the expense of where he's going. But he would make little notes about good week, or, you know, manager didn't pay us, or, you know, bought Bess some new shoes. Or all kinds of fabulous.
Did you learn a lot of new things to post on the blog after you read that?
I've learned a lot of new things. There's nothing giant. I mean, this diary had been examined by major biographers like Silverman. So there's not giant revelations, but there's just hundreds of fabulous new details. And some stuff that I don't think anyone ever could figure out what it said or put the pieces together. I've been able to dig a little deeper and realize, I find the newspaper clipping that goes with this particular, you know, oblique reference that he makes. And so I'm able to flesh that story out. So there's just, it's a lot of new and wonderful just color and details about these early years.
But one of the fascinating things to me was, again, the fact you saw details in a page that was completely blank that said volumes to you.
Yes. I'm not going to talk about that because okay. that's the grand finale okay. of the book, and it I sort of amazing. Built my talk around that. So I'll hold off on that. But yes, essentially the well, that's what blew my mind about working on this diary. And what I said to Mike is, it's like I thought this was largely going to be academic, go through it and flesh out this stuff. But what I realized is, wow, this thing is a story. This is a complete story. And it is the story. It's the yeah. story of how Houdini became famous, and what an interesting gift this diary is, and what he left us.
And the name of the book?
The book is called Escaping Obscurity, The Travel Diary of Harry Houdini, 1897 to 1899.
And it will most likely be available after Christmas.
Michael Albright is working on it right now. He's doing the design and layout, and he, you know, we're letting him take as much time as he needs. And he's turning this thing to an art book. This is going to be a big, beautiful coffee table book. And so I don't, we don't know how much longer that's going to take. So we're giving him a lot of time, and we were hoping by the end of the year. Wouldn't it be great for Christmas? I'm sort of telling people, I don't know, it might be early next year. Yeah. Not sure yet.
But it's going to be a good product once it's released, so don't rush it, right?
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. It'll be ready when it's ready.
Thank you very much, John. Always good. A pleasure to chat with you. So the Magic Word Podcast. Don't forget, that's wildabouthoudini.com. Learn new stuff all the time that's posted there. This is Scotty. I'm John Cox. And Scotty out. I want to talk with a friend of mine now, Morris Hertzberg. Didn't we room together? We roomed together.
Roomed together in Oporto, Portugal. Arthur Emerson had put us together on an after-FISM tour.
Yeah.
And we went together, and we had Father Cyprian with us, I think, was the third roommate. I can't recall if there was a fourth one, but there might have been a fourth one. I'm almost
Art
sure.
Art Emerson used to put together, of course, he was a travel agent, was his main job, but of course, Emerson West was his magic company.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And everybody had a packet trick from Art, and everyone was doing all the three card Monty and everything.
His color Monty was the one that just sold millions.
Yes, exactly. And not many people knew, and I just happened to luck into it, and that's my motto, I'd rather be lucky than good, and by gosh, it's turned out to be a lucky life, and a great deal of luck has come through magic, but Art was a travel agent, and he became my travel agent, and so when I was able to go someplace or do something, I'd call Art up, and he put me in the best rooms that I could afford, and so I did have particularly what comes to mind is another one to Hawaii. I was out there for the IBM in 1982, which remains one of the greatest IBMs of all time.
Right.
And that's where I first met Art and first got his packet trick, I think. I hadn't been in magic very long at the time, and 82 was probably about a year.
Yeah, I had Art also coordinate a tour for my family when we had gone to England and then over to Ireland, and he was sending faxes back and forth at the time to confirm these things, because obviously mail would have taken too long and certainly didn't have internet, and telephone calls were more expensive than a fax that would have all the information or whatever. And so anyhow, he put together a lot of these tours.
Well, Scott, you're doing the right thing, and one of the things that I've learned, and many people in magic have yet to learn it, magic is not about all the tricks we're learning. It's not about the stages and the effects we're doing. Magic comes down to one thing only, and that's the people.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are involved. You go through life once, and the quality of life you will have depends on the people you're running around with.
That's true.
And you can't find a better group of people than the magicians, and more interesting and...
It is a great dysfunctional family that we have here.
Yes.
But we get along great because we leave politics and religion and anything that divides us outside. And when we're together, we have a mutual camaraderie and respect for each other and magic. You know?
It's amazement, achievement. It's fun. It's everything that you'd like to get out of life.
Right.
Boiled down into a good friendship with lots of magicians and you get a chance to leave the audience behind and just be with some regular friends, and it's all about people.
Have you enjoyed this convention, Magic
Live? It's been a superb convention, one of the best ones.
Anything that stands out so far, I mean, the last day and a half?
Well, I've enjoyed a number of things. There's always so many, but the sessions we have in my case with the Red Group, we're in the morning, but we have the the conventions groups where they bring together noted thinkers and noted minds and people doing unique things in magic together. And so I enjoy those sessions. And then we have these focus sessions in the afternoon. And we just finished one with Steve Valentine, who has been... I've been fortunate to have met him in prior conventions and to listen to him talk about how to incorporate acting into your routines, I think, is something every magician needs.
Now, what I think is fascinating is that you didn't watch that just once, but...
I sat in for a second time. There's some lectures that are just so good. I don't need another trick.
Yeah.
What I do need is more friends and more more ability to put personality into an effect where people are coming to see you because of who you are, not because that you know this latest, greatest trick or, gee, is that you're so amazing. There are a lot of amazing people you really don't want to know that aren't good friends. But yet, the ones you'll find at the convention become your friends. And
that's
a wonderful thing of the conventions. And Stan has done such a great job with all these conventions and how he's done it. And you just hope that he'll live to be an old, old man like the rest of us.
That's
and
right.
So, because it's just too good to come to a stop almost. It's a highlight of every magician's life,
it is.
I think.
That's why he packs them out every year. Well, Morse, thanks very much. Always good to chat with you, my friend.
Well, it's always a pleasure. I hope we'll see you in some of the more exotic sites in the world, as magicians got to get around like that.
And, as we do.
And meet more fun people.
Okay. So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Morse Hertzberg. Scotty out. There's so many delightful friends we run into over here, and people who have from different walks of life. This particular guy walks a wonderful life.
He has
a very, very blessed life. You know him, perhaps the Magic Castle. You might know him then from the House of Cards. But I know him because he's just such a great guy. And here he is, Joey Martinez. How are you doing, Joey?
I'm truly blessed and highly favored. I know you are as well. How you been?
Fantastic, sir. Yeah. So how are things at the House of Cards?
No, they're amazing. We're still keeping magic alive. Mm-hmm. Having magicians come in blowing people's minds.
Seven nights a week. You
and
still have
brunch.
And brunch, too, now?
Yeah, we have families.
On Saturday, Sundays, or just on Sundays?
Just Sundays.
And you still have great pork chops?
Always.
That's
the greatest food. You know, we got to change it up a couple of times. The new pork chop that's coming, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So as far as the people who are coming in, you're booking all of the acts, is that right?
Correct.
Like Benjamin Barnes, I was talking to Ben about, he does the Chicago Magic Lounge.
Yeah.
And I know that you and Danny Archer and all the guys all get together on a regular basis.
We had lunch today with everybody. We had Cosmo out there and Terry Commons and Jack Goldfinger was there with us. And we had an amazing time.
Are you finding
Michael Chow?
You think there are more clubs that are opening? Or
you know, I get a lot of inquiries from different folks that are interested in opening them up, and we have the League of Theater Owners.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a small group of us that meet every Tuesday, sharing ideas and then helping people out. Anybody that has questions, I'm sure you're familiar with Sean Farquaad. And mm-hmm. He's our guru there and tells us where to get certain things, and it's just amazing. So it's good to have the family around, the magic family, that is.
Right. Right. So while you're here, are you looking for talent as well? I'm always looking for talent.
I've been blessed to know a lot of them, but the youngsters here, I mean, they're just doing amazing jobs. We just got out of a show. It just blew my mind.
Yes. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. I can't pronounce any of their names except for Rachel Wax.
Yeah.
she and Christopher Hart were the only ones from America.
Yeah. The Italian gentleman there just blew my mind at the very end. I mean, he was just great. The stuff that they're doing... even though it has a classic twist, they have their new age to go with it. So it's amazing.
Yeah, the last guy from Italy had done some amazing card work that just vanished. And I don't know. I can't explain it.
And that stops
you
still,
and I just looked at each other and said, I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely blew my mind.
And also the guy who was doing not just the needle swallowing act, which I thought was a very clever thing as far as having a sewing machine and doing that, but then he'd swallow the needles and then...
Bring it back out.
He had cork, wine cork, and something else, I think.
And then what, it looked like a cigarette? It looked like a cigarette came out?
And then he put a lit match in there, and then it all came back out, including the lit match.
Yes, of course.
Out of his mouth, and the cigarette, yeah.
That was amazing.
And Rachel Wax did a great job. Very funny. Good comedy.
Yeah, I heard a lot of good stuff about it. I got to see her, and it was amazing.
It was the first time I'd seen her perform. I've known of her for a while, but I haven't seen her until today. So, yeah, she met my expectations over there, too. And, of course, Christopher Hart is the MC and opening and doing a lot of stuff that he's done from the castle. You've known him forever, probably, too.
I've been blessed. I've been blessed to know him. He's every time he sees me, every time I see him, it's just like, it's like reuniting, right? Like, to me, here is one huge family reunion. It's good to see everybody, but it also, you leave here with the full spirit, right? The magic spirit is back with you, and you get to take that back home with you.
Yeah, yeah. And you've been coming for a number of years. Is there a particular memory or something from this that's kind of like, I remember so-and-so doing this, or I met somebody once, or what is it that...
You know, the memories, we keep having more and more memories, right? But yeah. I know for me, what holds true to me is being able to spend time with the loved ones that are no longer here with us, right? And so having those memories are the best.
That breaks me up every time. Whenever they always have a condolences or memories of people who have passed over the last year, it's fortunate or unfortunate that I know too many of them.
Yeah, but you know, the thing behind that, you know, we lost so many people, but we can keep them alive in our hearts, right?
That's exactly right.
We keep the memories alive. Yeah, the stories, and they just keep staying alive.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're able to talk, and I know there's certain names that you say, and people, the youngsters, are like, who? And I'm like, oh, you stick around. You're going to hear a lot more, right?
That's true. I've looked at the analytics of my podcast, and I'd probably say that over 50% of my listeners are between 55 and over. And I think it's because they can relate. They know a lot of people and these names and things. And then between 35 and 55 is probably about another 36%. So there are some young people who are listening then, too. I think they hopefully will enjoy the stories and learning about the history of who we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I talk about your podcast all the time. Make sure that people get on there and get to hear the stories.
Yep, that's what I'm trying to do, is archive the stories, you know, and I'm glad I had a chance to chat with you then, too.
Keep the memories alive. Keep the memories alive.
That's right.
No, I love you,
Scott. So the magic, I love you, too, man. For the Magic Word Podcast, I was Joey Martinez. Scotty out.